Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome, everyone, to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Grace, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from windy Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We've got a great show lined up for all of you. We have my co-host and friend, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda Feinholt is calling in live this week from Los Angeles, California. Linda, I know about the wind noise. I'm going to try and fix it, but can't get to fix it until we get the show launched.
No worries. It's sort of like having you participate from the middle of a gale.
I know. It's really windy here today. It's a beautiful day, but windy.
Wonderful. So I'm really looking forward to today's show. You know, Gina, you and I, in the past several months, have had a number of conversations with our audience and with the Breakthrough Academy, with Directions University students and so on, about this trend that's really becoming, how shall I put it? It was a sort of offshoot social movement on the side, but it's now really starting to define an entire generation. And it's this desire to have what we do day in and day out with our business lives make a bigger meaning in the world. We've talked about it with Simon Mannering. We've talked about it with other guests. And, you know, I'd love to spend a few minutes before we dive in just talking about what are these new trends that we're seeing and how it's influencing and affecting business.
Oh, I don't see it as a new trend, even a little bit. In my opinion, it's something that businesses should have been doing all along. You know, it's really interesting. If we look historically to back in the days of the late 1800s, the early 1900s, way back then, people didn't do business based on price. People did business based on the relationships they had, the people they knew. You know, the cobbler next door was who you bought your shoes from because he was the cobbler next door. It's just the way people did things. And back then, people really didn't just go out to make money in their business. They really did things to make a difference and make money at the same time. I really think we're just coming full circle today, going back to the old way business was done. And it's always so interesting to me because we really do have these cycles in life and business as a whole. We oftentimes don't realize that about every 80 years we come back to doing things the way they used to be done. Yeah, technology may have advanced, but the underlying way of life or way of doing business keeps coming back around over and over again. And I always find that so interesting, don't you?
I do. And, you know, over the years, demographers and people studying things have figured out how to name a generation and have defined generations as sort of 20-year span. So when I think about that 80-year cycle, it's sort of four generations. And it's fascinating to me, you know, when everybody lived and stayed close to community, it was so natural. You were doing business and play and all of your activities with your neighbors. And in this country in particular, it's less so in Europe, but in the United States of America, we've now had three and four generations where each generation of children pick up their bags and go adventuring to some other part of the country and therefore have to recreate community locally and figure out how you create new relationships for both the loving exchanges with neighbors as well as doing your local commerce and so on. And so it's particularly fascinating to see that we have folks who are in their, in particular, I'd say, in the 20 to 35, mid-30s age span, which seem to be of that generation, that are saying, okay, enough with the dislocation. How do we now recraft relationship throughout our business? It's not just about commerce. It's about relationship and commerce and purposefulness in the world. And I think you're still muted, Gina. Oh. Today's the day for Tech Fun.
I'm trying to switch to a different headset so that we can get rid of that wind noise.
That's okay. So, you know, you grew up in a different part of the country. I actually grew up a combination of Europe and the United States. And by being in Europe in my, age 8 through 14, what I saw were families who were, as whole families picking up, rather than just the individual picking up, but whole families picking up and moving and creating new community. You know, it's referred to as the expat or expatriate community, you know, when people of one particular country of origin look for like cultural or like-minded community to hang out in, even though they've placed themselves into another country, another culture, and so on. And I think what we're seeing nowadays is this amazing shift into how do we think about ourselves on a local level as well as a global level. And let me see if our guest has been able to get in on the line. Christina, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Yay, wonderful. Welcome aboard.
Hi,
I know
Christina,
we all had a little bit of
fun. How are you? Welcome. Nice to meet you.
So part of what has me so thrilled to have Christina Brzezinski with us today is that she's really lived this journey of what she thought she was going to do in her life and her career, always oriented towards how to make a difference in the world. And it's taken some really quite amazing and unusual loops. And so, Christina, I know that, you know, you headed off to college, as so many people do, with an underlying passion that you thought was going to lead you in a particular direction. And that isn't exactly how life developed for you, was it?
No, not at all. I started college thinking that, first I thought that maybe I would be a diplomat. And so I majored in international relations. And somewhere along the way, I decided against that. And I decided I really wanted to be a human rights lawyer. So eventually after college, I moved to Washington, D.C., where there are just so many international nonprofits. And I started working at a really great one and saw what the lawyers did every day. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I cannot do this, you know, having my nose buried in these huge legal books day in and day out. This is not the life for me. So from there, I started experimenting. And, it's a lot of twists and turns, and ended up starting my own business a few years later.
So, as you know, it's so interesting. I spent a lot of time yesterday with people who are what we term professional service providers, folks
mm-hmm.
who are not selling products per se, but are taking their expertise to help other people in business achieve what they're trying to do in business and so on. So as you started making this shift from the idea of being a rights lawyer and so on,
mm-hmm.
what was it you uncovered as you were doing your work with nonprofits and so on? What is it that you learned about yourself and what motivated you and who you wanted to serve and so on?
Once I realized that my dream was no longer my dream, it gave me a really clean slate. And so I was able to start from scratch, which was really, at first it was really scary, but it turned out to be the best thing for me because I was willing to try anything at that point. And so I loved the organization, and it was doing so many interesting and unique things, so I decided it was best to stay there. And, you know, I worked on the marketing and fundraising teams. I worked with the executive team. I worked with program management and finance. And I was able to see, really every part of the organization. And from there, I started thinking about, okay, like, what do I love doing? What are the different skills that are my best skills? And then also looking at the world and trying to figure out how do I use these skills, which for me are really like business strategy and marketing strategy, how do I take these skills and make the biggest difference in the world? And so it was, I had this realization that there are so many nonprofits out there who are doing these, I mean, really amazing things, but business can also make a huge difference in the world. And my skills are just so much better suited for business. So I'm sorry, I like ran to the phone and I'm still catching my breath. But so I realized like my skills are so much better suited for business. And so from there, I decided to go to business school and transition from the nonprofit sector to the corporate sector. And at that point in time, I thought, oh, I'll go work for, you know, Fortune 500 in their corporate responsibility office, and it will be great. And then I got into business school, and I'm like, oh, that's not exactly what I'm looking for either. Mm-hmm. And so it was more experimenting, and I took this phenomenal women's entrepreneurial leadership course. And I've always been really interested in, like, women's leadership and all of that, but I never could quite figure out what I was most passionate about. And so I never really got into, like, the politics or anything like that. And for me, it was really women's entrepreneurship. That's what I'm super passionate about. And all of a sudden, I realized I can combine my, you know, my skills and my interest in responsible business and along with my passion for women's entrepreneurship and create this really amazing business. So for me, it was just a lot of experimenting.
I love what you share in your bio about the fact that you kept experimenting. So you did work with a Swedish clean tech company.
Yep.
And you advised FIFA on the World Cup social responsibility and worked with a microfinance organization. I mean, truly really
right.
diverse and really eclectic businesses with very different approaches to influence.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and it was very helpful to see how they all handled things differently, and all of them were, you know, international organizations in one way or another. So it was great to see how they handled things at a local level and then also the global level. And I'm able to take all of that experience and work with my clients and help them.
So I have to ask, what does Ubuntu refer to? Your site
okay.
is Ubuntu Future, and
mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to this and sharing this with our listeners.
Sure. So Ubuntu is from Zulu. It's used mostly in Southern Africa. And it means that I am because you are, or I am because we are, and that we're all interconnected. And so my health and my success in life in general depends on your success and vice versa. And I wanted, for my business, I really wanted to play on that idea that, you know, we may be in business for ourselves and my clients are in business for themselves, but all of us are really interested in running businesses that benefit society, benefit the environment, and it's really a key principle for our businesses. And so Ubuntu just ties all of that together really well.
Very cool. I wasn't certain if it meant that you had a particular interest in doing programs in Africa or bringing the concept here. So that's very cool to understand.
Well, there's
sure,
an
definitely.
Article on Christina's site, and in it, it says, so what is Ubuntu? And, oh, gosh, where is that paragraph? Because the way it was described in that paragraph is just beautiful. You say that there really isn't a direct translation, but that it really is about many things. It's about community and caring for other and interconnectedness and improving your life in a way that improves the lives of others. And if every business practiced that, what a great world we would live in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you reframed your approach to working with women entrepreneurs, and what are some of the ways you're taking Ubuntu into your work with them?
In a lot of different ways. It means for different businesses, it will often mean different things. So most of my clients, they like to have some type of philanthropic program where they're, you know, donating some money to a nonprofit, and they may be partnering with the nonprofit or supporting it in some other ways as well. So I see a lot of people who are really interested in doing that. But going beyond that, it's often in the types of products that people offer. So it could be organic scrubs. Like I have worked with someone who, she's actually going to be in my upcoming magazine, and she has these amazing scrubs, and she's called Verve Organics. And so it could be the scrubs. It could be vegan and gluten-free food for people who aren't able to eat gluten-free, but the desserts are so amazing. Even though it's gluten-free and vegan, they taste phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of different types of products. And then it's also just in their operations. So, like, you know, what's their mission and vision? How do they want their business to change the world? And then looking at the values that they operate their business by, and what kinds of business partners do they work with, and do those business partners align with their values? And it's like a whole entire mindset of approaching business very differently. So instead of what we call approaching business as usual, we're doing business as Ubuntu.
Mm. What a cool phrase.
Thanks.
I love that. And who was your first client when you first shifted direction and decided that you wanted to work with entrepreneurs? What were the types of clients that you were working with?
My very first client was Malia Rosa, and they were selling cute athletic apparel for the woman who really wants to wear like bright, energetic, like spirited clothing. And so she had found this niche where, you know, it wasn't the yoga clothing and it wasn't the pastels and the grays, the light grays, but it was these bright colors with fun patterns. And it was really important to her to have a like fair trade product and then also support a couple of different nonprofits. And so she was my first one, and it was so much fun working with her on choosing which nonprofits she supported and tying. A lot of people want to do what at first glance seems to be very disparate programs or ideas or activities. So for example, she had the clothing line, and then she wanted to support an international nonprofit that helped girls overseas, and then she also wanted to support a domestic nonprofit in the States that worked with or that supported homeless women and helped them get back into the workforce and find permanent housing. And so it all sounds pretty different, but once you sit down and, you know, we started working on it, we were able to say, well, it's really about, you know, women unleashing their power in very different ways. So it may be their power on the athletic field or running or whatever they're doing sports-wise. It could be, you know, girls unleashing their power in the classroom, or it could be women entering the workforce.
Very cool. Very cool. And you used a phrase a little while ago that I wanted to make sure that we have in our conversation today, which is of people really wanting to be living their values now. And it's one of the phenomena that I'm seeing is people are getting clearer and clearer about what their values are. I would say, you know, in past years, people's behavior, if we watch behavior and say you actually exhibit what your values are, was, you know, work like a dog, make as much money, and then on the other side of it, when I can turn down the jets, that's when I'll start getting involved socially,
right,
and making a difference in the world. And it's really quite different now, where people are really wanting, the moment that they're entering into their careers, their working lives, their business building, they are wanting to bring their values in as they shape their business and gift back to the world at the same time.
Right, right. And I think almost everyone that I've worked with, and I'm seeing the same trends at large too, is everybody wants to start that way. It's not, they don't want to wait. They, you know, people say things like, I don't want to sell my soul, or I don't want to feel slimy for 20 or 30 years first. Like, I want to do this right from the very beginning. And if they're starting a business, then it's, they want to incorporate these values into their business right from the very beginning.
So I'm really curious, because you're in with them on such an intimate level, are you finding that because they want to make a difference in the world starting now, that they're different in how they're going about building their business so that it's profitable so that they can make a difference in the world? Are you seeing a different velocity in how they're focusing, planning, and executing business?
Right. I'm seeing a number of different things. I think one thing is that there's this, I would say, like a fire or an energy that they have that I don't think other, I mean, and I'm not working with other entrepreneurs, but the people I'm working with, I think they have this fire and energy that others tend not to have as far as growing their business. Because when they're first starting out, they're saying, well, I can donate 1% of my profits. And I can go volunteer with this nonprofit just by myself because I'm a solopreneur and I have maybe 3 customers. So, but they know that as they grow their business, they can donate more, they can get their customers involved in volunteering. And so there's this, I think because they're not just working for themselves and their own benefit, it's just propelling them to work, I think, even harder. And then also be more creative, because when you're not putting all of your profits back into your business because you are donating some, or maybe you are spending a little bit more on certain supplies or vendors because you're looking for organic, or you're looking for vendors or service providers who, you know, are operating by the same values or are using certain types of resources, it also causes people to be a lot more creative in how they approach things. So I would say those are 2 big things. And then more long-term, businesses, and there are all different kinds of studies that are starting to come out that prove this now, but businesses that operate more ethically and responsibly are more resilient during, like, the tough economic times, and they just also perform better over the long run. So it can be a little bit harder getting started. But once you get going and you build that momentum, things really take over.
Is it this notion that there's a loyalty factor that blossoms because of having the values built into the business? So it may be harder finding the right match at the beginning, and yet your customers, your clients are more steadily loyal and stick with you at when there are economic downturns or tough times?
Right. Yeah, there are a couple of different things coming into play. So one of them is the loyalty. With customers, they're much more committed. They're less likely to leave you and go to a competitor because a competitor is offering a cheaper product. So customers are more likely to stay, but also employees tend to be more committed. And when you're looking at, when you're making decisions based on, like, it doesn't, so far I haven't seen that it really matters what types of values you have. Like, you know, if a company has 4 to 5 values, they tend to cover a spectrum of things. And when you're making these decisions based on those values and you're thinking about profits and planet and people, and you're looking more long-term, you're not looking at just for profits tomorrow or next week. And because you're making these more long-term decisions, it's just better for long-term growth.
And you've got a really interesting article on your blog about how travel can help you grow your business. In it, you
yes.
talk about incorporating new practices into your business. And you tell a little story about getting to a hotel room in Sweden. I think that story might be a great example of what you're talking about for our listeners to draw from. Can you tell that story now?
Definitely. So I had know, it's so funny because I was flying from Washington, D.C. to Sweden. And, you know, my friends and I, we didn't even know if we were going to get to Sweden because that volcano had erupted, and so there was all that ash in the air. And my flight was delayed, so what should have been maybe an 8-hour flight with a stop in London turned into something much longer. So by the time we all got there, we were exhausted and we were hungry. And so my friend who I was seeing, or who I was sharing a hotel room with, we're like, okay, we're just going to run down to the convenience store, buy a sandwich or whatever we can find, and bring it back to the room. So we did that, and we get back, and we eat, and we're like, okay, we're going to go to bed, and we'll start fresh tomorrow. And we're looking at our stuff, and like, where's the trash can? And we were actually, like, walking around the room looking for a trash can. And finally, we're looking at this, like, you know, it was this bucket or container on the floor. And it had, what was it, 3 different compartments to it. And I think one was plastic, one was glass, or no, plastic and glass maybe, and then paper and biodegradable items. I'm like, okay, well, the scraps of food can go in there. And then we're looking at the food containers, which were styrofoam. And we're like, well, this isn't biodegradable. It's not recyclable. What do we do with this? And so finally, because, you know, my friend at one point, she's like, well, we can just put it next to the trash can. I'm like, no, we don't want to just put it next to the trash can. That's rude to housekeeping, and it's junky. And so finally I was like, wait, there has to be a real trash can in the bathroom. So I went into the bathroom, and sure enough, there was a regular trash can, and that's where we put it. But after that, we never, you know, bought anything that we wouldn't be able to put in that wasn't recyclable or biodegradable. So it really changed our behavior. And the lesson I took from that was, you know, make the good things easy and make the bad things hard.
And what a great
I love that
thing
imagery.
For a
I...
business owner to look at, right? Who thinks
right.
of things that way? Nobody, without knowing better, would just think that way subconsciously, right, Linda?
Well, that's what my imagination as, Christina, as you were describing that, is like, ooh, all these other businesses that I work with are like, ooh, how can we take that thinking in to literally, deliberately spend the time designing how to make what you don't want people to do really hard to do.
Exactly. Yeah, just make it hard. And, I mean, it doesn't have to be in terms of the environment. It could be, you know, making unethical things really hard to do, or, you know, or just things that you don't want people to do for whatever reason, and then make the stuff that you want them to do really easy. There are so many different ways you can do that.
Mm-hmm. 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 Of all the folks
really
that you've worked
brilliant.
With, yeah.
Thank you.
Have you figured out with them how to take that back into the conversations with the folks you're working with to add that in to their thinking?
You know, so far it's something we've talked about, but a lot of them are really trying to, a lot of the people I'm working with right now are in the startup mode. So they're actually, I think they're not even quite there yet. They're more in, how do I bring this all together? They come to me with all of these, you know, I guess they're multi-passionate, but they come in with all of these different ideas and like, I don't know what to do and I don't know how to make sense of it all. And so I'm working with a lot of people right now who are actually just getting started. But that's definitely one of the things, along with like creating win-win solutions on a regular basis, things like that, that they can start building into their business as they go.
So do you have any favorites that you're helping shape right now?
Goodness. I would say no and yes. No, because I think they're all so different and so unique and exciting that it's really hard to even say that I like one more than the other. And all of my clients, I mean, they're just such nice people. And so their businesses are fantastic, but the people, too, are really great to work with. But I would say, you know, the vegan desserts, I don't have any like special dietary needs, but I do try to eat vegan as much as possible, and I thought that, you know, I'd have to give up brownies and, you know, those other things that are really tasty. And so I think that the vegan desserts is probably, like, closest to my heart just because it addresses an important need. So
we want to see them succeed hugely.
Exactly.
And most of our listeners are in some form of startup as well. So for someone that is just getting started, what advice do you have for them? How do they think about this differently? Because in a couple of the examples that you've already shared, they're clearly businesses that started out wanting to change the world. The people that listen to this show don't necessarily have this vision of changing the world. They're growing a business. And yet, I really want them to understand that I don't care what kind of business you're in, even if your business is teaching people how to play tennis, you can change the world at the same time.
Right, exactly. I would say that there are probably a few different things that you can do. One is really nailing down your unique values. And when I say unique, I mean going beyond, I mean they're good things, but going beyond respect and honesty and those sorts of things that we all value. And really finding the things that make your business unique, because those are going to help guide how you interact with customers. When you're able to really embody those and start developing different stories about, you know, how you as the business owner or how certain employees have lived those values, you can reinforce what those values are and share great examples. But it also empowers your employees and even your vendors and your service providers to make certain decisions on your behalf because they sit there and say, I know your values. I can make these recommendations or I can make these decisions because I know where you're going and I know what's important to you. So I think values is something that's, I don't want to say it's easy because I see a lot of people really struggle with coming up with those really unique values. But it's a really good place to start. And it's something that your clients and your customers will really start to notice because if you take that extra step and say, okay, how do my customers experience these values? That will completely change your approach to providing, you know, your services and your products and the customer experience. So that's one good place to start. And then another good thing to do if you're interested in supporting some type of nonprofit or if there's a social cause that's been close to your heart, what you can do is just start thinking about, like, what out there, what social or environmental causes get you really excited. And it could be that you get really excited and enthusiastic or you get excited angry, but what is it that really fires you up? And then how does that relate to your business? And it's really important to connect that back to your business because if you're going to start donating money or talking about it with your customers, you really want it to make sense to your customers or to your employees. But that's another thing that you can do is just figure out what is that, you know, that social cause that's really important to you. And it may not be donating money. It could be maybe it will change your hiring practices. So I have she's not a client, but she is a friend who's working in South Africa, and she said they're just so many, and this is true in the States too, but she said there are just so many students who have dropped out of high school and have no opportunities. And so she wants to be able to start taking some of them on as like apprentices or not really interns, but at that level, and really start training them and giving them a good income so that they're able to develop skills that they can use in the workforce. So it can be a lot of different things, but figure out what it is And then how can you tie it into either your business practices or tie it into what type of nonprofit you support?
I think that's really helpful for our listeners.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about this so deeply because I myself started as a board member of a nonprofit in my mid-20s, and because of my business background over the years, what I was able to do with that nonprofit is help reshape the strategy it was using. But it's so fascinating, and what you just said I think is so important, which was you really have to find what you value and want to make a difference in the world, and how you're going to share that story when you bring it back and share it through your website, through your conversations with your clients, so that they really do understand what's the value inside of it. And in thinking about it, how your business matches that value. When I look at my own work over the years, whether it's been in the consulting I've done, the coaching I've done, the Breakthrough Academy, the purpose underlying all of them are identical to my purpose when I go and become involved in the nonprofit world, which is, for me, it's always about unleashing potential. That's the capstone. It's teaching techniques so people learn those techniques and can unleash their own potential. In the nonprofit world, it's helping a nonprofit figure out how to structure itself so they can do more with the funds. Or the one I've been passionately involved with for a very long time is called the Jewish Free Loan Association, and they now have other similar associations across the United States and in other parts of the world, but the essence of it is making interest-free loans to people who could not access funds in other settings. And again, it's for tools for work, transportation vehicles for work, to go get scholastic training, et cetera, et cetera. And so this common theme, again, is figuring out how to help people so that they can unleash their potential.
Right, yeah.
That
exactly,
common thread.
Yeah, having
if
that
you
common
think
thread
back
is
a
so
few
important.
Months and
the, yeah.
If you think back a few months to when we had Dr. Ben Mack on the show, one of the things I learned from Ben years and years ago about branding was that when you're first figuring out what your brand is about, he calls it creating a legend platform. And your legend platform is essentially outlining those things your brand stands for, those things your brand stands against, and really defining what if someone can expect in doing business with you. And an example that I use often is a little family-owned restaurant on Route 66 that's now in its third or fourth generation of family members that are owning it. And they now have three or four locations. And the place is called Lambert's. It's known as the home of the Throat Roll. And right on their website at throatroll.com, throwedroll.com, you can see pictures of the side of the building, the inside of the building, and on their About page, they have something called Old Norm's 13 Golden Rules. And these 13 Golden Rules are really that legend platform, the what you can expect when doing business with Lambert's. And that is the mural on the side of their building, on the front of their hostess stand, on the back of the menu. It is everywhere when you're going to Lambert's. And people don't really have to guess what an experience at Lambert's might be like. It's very, very clear what you're going to expect doing business with them, eating there. They want it to feel like you're not a guest, but you're a member of the family, that you're eating in the kitchen and not in the dining room. And that's exactly what it feels like when you're there. And I think that really is a lot of what we're talking about today. It's not just philanthropy giving money to a nonprofit charity. It's really creating an experience, making a difference, and leaving your mark in the world, whether it's through a nonprofit or not.
Exactly, exactly. And it needs to, I think for businesses that do support nonprofits, it needs to extend beyond the nonprofit. Otherwise, people will see, oh, that's great, you're supporting this nonprofit, but when, you know, I'm working with you, as whether it's a customer or you know, a business partner or something else. But when I work with you, I don't see that value alignment, and there's a disconnect. And it actually can make people more cynical and repel them from your business. So it's really
important. That's a really good point.
Yeah, it's really important to have those values align throughout your business, and don't just think, oh, well, I support this nonprofit, my work here is done.
I'd never really thought about it that way, but that is a really good way to look at it. It's much bigger than that, much bigger
right.
than that.
Right, and it's possible to not support a nonprofit and be one of the, you know, businesses that's making the biggest difference in the world. So it's, you know, the nonprofit is a great thing, and I support a nonprofit through my business, but it's not, you know, it's not the only way to do it, and it's not the be-all, end-all.
Yesterday I was having a conversation with a client, and we were thinking back to what comes first to mind about, quote, corporations making a difference, and the image that popped into my head was the commercial that was on television years ago, and I want to say it was from the mobile oil company that was
mm-hmm.
showing a little red fox on how they're making a difference in the world because they were digging tunnels so that the little red fox living on the tundra, you know, could continue on its normal life path without being
right.
interrupted by what the big oil company was doing. And I have that very vivid idea still in my mind, but I don't know that it would have made a buying difference for me.
Sure.
I don't know that I pulled into a mobile station instead of a different company station because of that commercial.
Right. Well, and I think, I mean, even though it's something we expect, it's not necessarily something that happens. But we expect all businesses to take the necessary precautions to, you know, prevent the fox or the ducks or whatever, you know, it might be from being, you know, covered in oil or some, you know, other chemical. We expect that. So it's, I mean, if you're just doing what society expects of you, it's not going to make a difference to customers or employees. There's a baseline that we all have to meet. And it's when we start going above that baseline and really doing all of these different extra things and telling a great story and creating a great experience that it will make a difference.
Great way to say that. Really great way to say that.
Thank
and
you.
And I think every company has the potential to really make a big difference. When we look
Definitely.
At examples of social entrepreneurship, like Tom's
mm-hmm.
Shoes, for example, when they're out there doing things to make a difference, they're doing things in a for-profit company. But
mm-hmm.
just because they really thought things through strategically, making money lets them do more good, and doing more good lets them make more money at the same time.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think that's hard to do. I just think not enough businesses think it through strategically at the beginning, and so they don't, because they don't know that they can.
Right, and it's, it didn't always used to be like that. It used to be, a long time ago, like 150 years ago and back, businesses would actually get a charter from the state. So, like, we all have to have our business licenses. But it used to be that if businesses were expected to also benefit society in some way. And it was spelled out in their charter how they were going to do that. And if, you know, the state government in the U.S. or whoever, or, you know, some country government in another country thought that they weren't meeting that charter, they could revoke the charter and say, or if they weren't meeting that, weren't continuing to benefit society, they could revoke the charter. And it was like that since business got started centuries and centuries ago. And it's really just been in the past, like, 100, 150 years where things have changed and there's been so much more of a focus on profit. And now I think we're starting to go back the other way.
Which is so interesting,
yeah.
You know, back, Gina, to what you and I were talking about this sort of 80-year cycle of values shifting and people acting from a very different value set.
Couldn't
yeah.
agree more.
And it's very interesting.
I'm going to mute for a few minutes so you don't hear this wind noise from the background. The wind is getting really bad.
I'm visualizing you standing on deck with your hair and your skirt blowing behind you, you know, like a gale force wind.
I was smart. This morning I went in and took the skirt off and put the pants on because the last time I was out here when it was this windy, I had this little sundress on.
Yeah.
And I went to go fix my umbrella and my arms were above my head. And it was totally a Marilyn Monroe moment. The entire dress went up and literally locked my arms up. I couldn't get them down again. So, so I learned that lesson. I got pants on.
Where's the camera when you need it? I love it.
Go ahead, guys.
So, Christina, you know, there's so many marvelous things that you're working on right now. One of them is the launch of this digital magazine. So I would love if you would share with our listeners how this idea came to fruition and what you're going to be doing with it.
Definitely. So the magazine fulfills a few different purposes. One of them is that I love to, or actually I am doing this next week when I launch the magazine, is launch this global movement of women entrepreneurs who are doing business as Ubuntu. And so the publication of the magazine will kick all of that off. And the magazine also provides a lot of great role models for women entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs in general who want to make a difference. It gives them a lot of really great role models of this is what they're doing and this is what it looks like. And what isn't, you know, an ordinary business? It doesn't have to be, they don't have to be selling like organic products or anything like that. It's just a regular service-based business, but this is what the inside of the business looks like and here are some of their practices and this is how it fuels business growth. So it gives that inside look. And the other really important thing about role models is that for a lot of women, when we, and this was true in my case, which is why it's so important to me, but when we don't see women who are, you know, entrepreneurs or politicians or whatever it might be, we think that we can't do it. And so I grew up, you know, I have family members who are entrepreneurs. I grew up in Michigan where there are all of these really well-known entrepreneurs from the state, and I learned all about them, but all of them are men. So I never once thought, oh, I'll start my own business. And later on when I started meeting all of these women entrepreneurs and learning from them, all of a sudden it was like a light bulb or something switched in my head, and I'm like, oh, I can do this. And so it's really important to me to get these role models out there so that other women who have a really great idea but are kind of sitting on the fence, they'll say, oh, maybe I can do it too. And then the third purpose is just to bring everybody together and so people can see what others are doing and start sharing ideas. And that's really what's going to, I think, propel us forward is when we're working together on this instead of just in isolation.
Really cool. And I'm so excited for you and for the magazine. It's actually called She Changes the World. It's a digital magazine. And any of our listeners who want to go and take a look at it and subscribe to it, you're going to be able to find it in the show notes as well as directly at bbdnow.com/Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U. So I myself am really looking forward to seeing this and be able to really enjoy this and pass this along to others because you're so right about the fact that all of us at heart are looking for role models. And if what we want is more involvement by women and we want it more public and more just more the norm to have leaders who are women who have come through every kind of business, every kind of pursuit, then the more it's modeled, the more examples of it that we keep showing to people who are entering into that the new stage of their working life, it's so important. I just revel in the fact that you're bringing this out to the market.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I'm really excited to launch it and get it out there for people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had it in my notes. One of the things that's really core to the work you're doing is really showing people how they can craft a conscious brand from the inside out. And we've been talking about anchoring it to our values, anchoring it to our interests, anchoring it to the difference we wish we could see in the world, and so on. And when you're working with folks, I've heard you share today how you help them prioritize and figure out which idea to pursue and turn into a business. And at what stage in your work with them are you helping them figure out the businessness of it versus the brandness of it?
Right. With the brand, it's really so much based on how the business is operated. And so we're calling it a brand, but it's really just how people are experiencing the business, and they're going to experience the business based on how you're operating. And that includes, you know, whether we're talking about strategy or we're talking about HR, if we have employees, or we're talking about finance, it really includes all of these different areas. And I think it's a different way of looking at things. And it's more of a perspective that I've taken from the nonprofit sector, where there are certain expectations of nonprofits, and this is starting to become true too for businesses that are saying, I'm making a difference and I'm a very, very responsible or ethical business. People hold these organizations and these companies to higher standards. And so people will be looking at how you run your business and what the strategy is and what, you know, techniques and tactics are you using or not using. And so there are those moments where we're working on, say, for example, the mission statement, and there's certainly, I mean, that drives the strategy. So there's absolutely a strategic part to it. But then there's also the part where, okay, well, do we like this word better than that word? And then that becomes more the branding. But ultimately, we're starting from, like, the ground up, and we're working on the business and then saying, okay, this is how we talk about it, or these are, I don't get into colors and stuff, but these are some of the external things that people will see or experience. But we really start on the inside, and so that's more the business strategy and the operations.
You're also pointing out a fundamental reorientation in what's happening with businesses. Years ago, it used to be that if we talked about strategic planning, you know, if you talked about Toyota, everyone knew they had a 100-year plan. But the average business, when they talked about strategy, was talking about a 10-year plan. And then when the dot-com era came and technology was transforming everything in business, from communication to analysis to production to connecting and marketing, and everything in business got so radically changed by technology that so many businesses and so many industries, everybody said, I can't think 10 years ahead. I have no idea what the world will look like. And this is a new way to be able to, in fact, come back to the topic of strategy, even at the startup level.
Exactly. And it's really much more a strategy and not so much strategic planning. Like, I'm not going to ever sit down with someone and do even a 5-year plan. Like, that's not, when I'm saying strategy, it's not planning so much.
Right.
Here's our business philosophy. These are our values, our principles. These are, you know, and it's very different. And so it's really great because it enables businesses to be very nimble and respond to different opportunities or threats in the marketplace. In response to, you know, arising customer needs, or just it helps people move quickly in a very quickly changing world. So,
while also keeping it attached and aligned to what values are, what their vision and their goals are,
right,
so that it makes it also easier when an opportunity presents itself to say, great idea, not a fit for my business.
Exactly.
And not get tangled up in that's a bright, shiny object opportunity. Starting with his values, as you've been pointing out, really lets people create really strong anchors for all of their decision-making, their operations,
Definitely.
Everything in their
yeah.
business.
Yeah, and it gives you a laser focus without getting that tunnel vision, I think is one of the really great benefits to it.
Okay, that is going to have to be written on a placard. Having laser focus without the tunnel vision. I love it. So what else are you working on in addition to the digital magazine? What else is in the works for Ubuntu?
Sure. So doing a lot of clients' work, and then one of the big projects, and I'm just starting it right now, so it's a really big project, so it will take a while. But the next big thing coming down is that when we talk about like women reaching a certain percentage in a governing body, and it's 30 to 35%. So whether we're talking about like the C-suite or elected officials or whatever it is, once we hit that 30 to 35% point, we're no longer like, oh, the woman over there or whatever. It's our values and our ideas and our approaches really start resonating with people because we're no longer seen based on our gender. We're just seen as, you know, part of the group. And so what's really exciting is that women entrepreneurs now own 37% of businesses worldwide. So we've just passed that crucial 35% point.
Very
so
cool.
What I'd really like to focus on now is how do we use this? Like, how do we use this as a way to make business even better? And so, for example, companies like Coke plan on having, I think it's 5 million women entrepreneurs in their supply chain by 2020.
Right.
And, yep. And Walmart sees women entrepreneurs as providing the more like innovative products for their stores. And so these big companies are starting to see like the power that we have and the influence that we have. And so now how do we use that to really make a much bigger difference than what any of us can do on our own?
I love the way you've shared in today's conversation this interrelationship between your figuring out what your values are and
mm-hmm.
how you worked through all the steps to figure out how you're living them in your business and through your business, and in turn doing the same for your clients. It's this really wonderful flow that I'm just loving everything that you're describing for our listeners today. And helping them understand that it can be really the approach taken on a local level or on a global
mm-hmm.
level.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. So I know that you and Simon Mannering were able to connect. I was sorry you weren't able to be at his event because my mind is going, you should be in touch with the UN Foundation as well. So I'll have to figure out how to make that happen.
Did Simon before Linda's introduction?
Say that again.
She didn't know Simon before your introduction?
No, I introduced her. Christine and I actually met the week after Simon's event, so I put them together.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
I know.
You and Simon are going to have so much to talk about.
Yeah, we really are.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, Linda, why don't you remind our listeners of where they can go get signed up for the new digital magazine? I already did.
Yay. So, folks, if you go to bbdnow.com/UBUNTU, Ubuntu, you can sign up for the brand new She Changes the World digital magazine and connect with Christina and find out everything else that she's working on in coming weeks, months, and years. I'm thrilled for it.
And, Christina, I love what you're doing. It's something very near and dear to my heart. Everything I teach is really about social entrepreneurship. If there's anything I can do at all to help you, please just let me know.
I will. Thank you.
And Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody, and thank you so much, Christina. It's been a great hour.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye, all.
We'll be right back.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.